what kind of birds you had in your aviary?
In my aviary, I had some British finches, green finches, some goldfinches. I had some canaries. You can have different types of canaries, like the Norwich and the all sorts of other names, different canaries. I also had some Australian finches, they're called zebra finches, tiny little things, and they had sort of orangey yellowy beak with lots of little spots around their beaks and that. They're happy little things, but they bred very profusely. That's one feature about them. They bred like similar to not parakeets, the budgies. They bred as profusely as budgies, yeah.
Who built it?
I built it. It was an aviary that incorporated a dog kennel. And I built it in such a way that there was a middle passageway, and then to the right there was the kennel for the Alsatian, and then to the left was the aviary, and a part of the aviary had the, what you call the winter quarters. So when it's very, very cold, they went into a little sort of building. The birds went into a little building sort of thing, and when it's very, you know, and in the evenings they'd go into this evening sort of quarter as well. So it's somewhere where they're sheltered when it was very, very cold, as you know. So it, and then so they had the freedom to stay in there all night, and when daylight came they came out. But in the winter time they'd spend more time in the, that's why we call it winter quarters. Yeah, so I designed it and built it. Yeah.
And what was it? It was wooden.
It was made of part concrete for the base, and it had to have, because of rats and that could dig and go under and attack them, you took about 4 to 5 inches where you did, you dug a trench all the way around and used some wire netting to embed so that the rats wouldn't dig under. And then you would use some wooden, you'd have a half wood, a base of about 6 or so many inches of wood, and then you'd have wire, proper aviary wire, and then you'd have a roof. In the case of the winter quarters, that would have a proper roof, a solid roof, but the rest would have just the wire roof, so that they get a lot of air in that, yeah. And you can see them from a distance. And you'd have sort of tree branches and branches of trees, and I had lots of live bushes and trees in for them to nest in and that, yeah. So it's quite a complicated setup.
What got you started? Why did you want an aviary?
That's a good question. A friend of mine introduced me to a booklet that was issued, I think, once a week or once a month, can't quite remember. I think it was once a week, called Cage and Aviary Birds. And I started buying this, and you could see where all the dealers, people who sold cage birds, and you could buy from them through the post all over from any part of the country, really. So you could buy, you could not just British and foreign finches, you could buy all sorts of other birds if you were interested. And it was quite an eye-opener for me, because you could buy all sorts of exotic birds like parrots and, you know, macaws and all sorts of things. So it was an, what you call a magazine for aviculturists, basically. And you get all the different products like wire netting for special wire netting for making the aviary, and you'd get you can buy board seed through the post, and you can buy products like the thing that the birds need to peck on, the cuttlefish bone, that kind of a thing. So you buy these things through the post. So by buying that booklet once a week, you would be kept up to date with all the different products that are on the market and wherever. And if you wanted to buy a new stock of birds, you can, you know, negotiate and buy them.
Can you describe for me how you looked after them?
Yeah, you looked after them by setting up different sort of gadgets that it's if you think of a bottle that's full of seed, and there's a gadget at the bottom, like the bird feeder that you would get out in someone's garden, but on a smaller level, on a smaller basis, and it's an automatic feed. So as they eat the bird seed, which is very tiny, that would allow more to trickle down. So you'd set up a lot of these different bottles full of bird seed all around the aviary, and you'd also set up a similar gadget with water, so that they had water to go to, so it was an automatic feeder of water and bird seed. And then you could buy other seeds that were picked directly from, if you think of grains of wheat and that, similar to that, and you just tied those together and hung them in the aviary, and they could pick in that wild bird seed sort of thing. So different things to keep them interested sort of thing.
Can you describe to me simply how you should handle a bird?
Yeah, how you... First of all, I must say, once they're in that aviary, they're difficult to locate. And they're difficult to... Because the aviary is quite large, if you wanted to catch a particular bird, it's quite a difficult thing, unless you had set up a particular little area whereby you would chase most of them into the winter quarters. But in there, you would have another area whereby it's a smaller, if you think of a cage, a smaller cage, couple of cages sort of thing, the size of, and eventually if you chased all of them into that particular little area and then closed it off, then you'll be able to get hold of the one that you wanted. But it would be almost impossible to be out in the aviary and try to catch one of them.
Can you just describe physically?
Physically how? But what you'd need to do is to be careful to hold the 2 feet very, very delicately, and because they're very good at pecking, and pecking you very, very viciously. So you need to control the movement of the head. So you need to use your 2 hands so that you didn't injure them, and at the same time they didn't just wriggle away from you. So it's something that's rather difficult to explain. You did it in such a way that you contain the bird's body with the beak at one end and the 2 legs at the other, sort of. Yeah.
And can you tell me about the escapees and the escape?
Right, yeah, escapees. I didn't have many escapees, but on the occasion when I did get some escapees, what happened was the fact that because they were cage birds, they weren't as good at... They'd become... They were obviously aware of all the other birds around them. So when they escaped, I think that was a new scenario for them. So they didn't just disappear for miles and miles. They were in the vicinity, and they would come, and because they were being fed, they had obviously lost the habit of foraging for themselves. So they'd be around the aviary and top the aviary and quite, you know, in the garden area for quite some time. So you would then set up a bird cage with a sort of a trap thing so that they'd go into to eat some seed, and then you'd trap them and catch them again. So it over a couple of days you would be able to catch them back again. Yeah. But eventually, if you didn't, then they would then disappear, or the other birds would probably take advantage of them or whatever, because they would look obviously different. They'll be, to the other birds, they'd be a different sort of a, you know, they'll look obviously different. So that was the way. You caught them fairly quickly. Because when they got hungry, then, you know, they'd be on top of the aviary, communicating with the others, because don't forget they had got used to the group situation. So they, most of the time they didn't go very far, really. Yeah.
What happened to the birds? What happened to the aviary after your wife died?
We had moved to a different house when my wife died. So that this was in the original, my original address in Birmingham. We moved to Tamworth, and my wife died in Tamworth. So that was a different thing. But before we had moved to Tamworth, I think I got rid of the birds because we were due to move anyway. Yeah, I think I sold up most of them, and we sold the house and moved to Tamworth.
Try very, very simply to just describe, not in loads and loads of detail, but your relationship with the birds.
My relationship with the birds. Yes, that's a good question. I would say my relationship with the birds started out as a hobby thing, but it became something. It was still a hobby, but I didn't realize just how intense it was going to become. Because with quite a lot of the birds, especially the zebra finches, they multiplied. They had young ones, and so did the canaries and that. And it was very fascinating to watch them build nests and feed the young and all that. And after a while, it became a very absorbing sort of a pastime, which I would say became more than a hobby. It was a very powerful relationship for me, yeah, because of that element of observing the social behavior of these birds, how they looked after their young, and the way they would squabble, you know, the different types would squabble sometimes. But the aviary was big enough to accommodate squabbles and that, so that was all very fascinating.
One more, same idea, so very clear when you begin, what it feels like, what it felt like, your memory of what it felt like, either taking care or holding the birds, but just what that felt like.
Yeah, taking care of the birds in terms of feeding them and giving them water, I must say that on one occasion in particular, I think we went on holiday, and I got the planning wrong in terms of the volume of food that was left for them. I can remember this now. And I didn't leave enough food, and when I came back, some of them were struggling. I think a couple had died, and that was very traumatic for me. On the other hand, it was very touching that they got to know you, so that as soon as you went into the aviary, some of them would just hover around and fly quite near to you and that sort of thing, and observe you as well. So there was quite an interesting relationship that built up.
This story of a breaking down.
Yeah.
The important ingredients that I remember that it would be nice to hear again, but I'd like you to tell the whole story, but the things that I remember was that sense of how dark it was.
That you were
carrying your saxophone in its case.
Shall I start at the... Are we rolling?
And just a couple more things. The dogs on the farm.
Being picked up by a passerby.
But if you could make a very clear beginning and keep it as simple as possible.
I'll try not to be long-winded. When we went to live in Tamworth, I got doing what we call gigs with local bands. All right, so we stop then.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, I need to turn mine off as well.
It's fine. Just let it roll. Just turn off the phone. That's good.
When you least expect them to, they go off. Yes, I'll start again from the beginning.
Could you start the story from just from the moment that the
car broke down? One night when I was going back home after a musical job, my car broke down on a very unlit road about 5 miles outside Tamworth. This would have been about 12:30, 1 o'clock, And I realised that car wasn't going to go any further, so I took my saxophone out of the car, locked it, and then decided to walk in the direction of Tamworth, my home. Kept walking, as I said, no lights along the road, absolutely dark, and then in the distance I heard dogs barking, which turned out to be a farm just by the side of the road. Now, the barking of those dogs set off all sorts of thoughts in my head, because I wasn't quite sure whether those dogs were on the loose or whatever. I got nearer and noisier, whatever, and as it turned out, they obviously were within a confined space, and they didn't run out on the road and gobble me up or anything like that. But the other thing was that I kept trying to thumb a lift whenever car lights appeared, but no one would stop, and I kept walking, and I think I must have walked for a good mile and a half, perhaps, and eventually someone stopped and gave me a lift into Tamworth. And I must say I was extremely grateful for that, because at that point in time I was exhausted, and I wasn't quite sure what was going to happen